The show is live and local. It's your connection to local music and more. Lots of music you can go out and see and hear this weekend, as well as theater, including a performance by the King's Singers, celebrated ensemble from England, who are going to be at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois Springfield tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. I'll be talking with one of their members in a matter of minutes. And then David Llewellyn, who is a singer-songwriter originally from Wales. He is going to be at the Heartland Gallery in downtown Urbana, along with Swedish singer-songwriter Ida Kristen. At 7 o'clock tonight, we'll be talking with him later in the show. It's Live and Local.
The gift to be simple, the gift to be free. Tis the gift to be simple, tis the gift to be free. Is the gift to be free.
We just heard music that is probably pretty familiar. It's called The Gift to Be Simple, and its origins seem to be various depending upon where you read. It was sung by the King's Singers, who were just in Bloomington, Illinois last night. They're going to be in Springfield on Saturday night at Sangamon Auditorium. And with me on the phone from Bloomington at the moment is the tenor of the group, Paul Phoenix. And I really appreciate you taking the time to join us.
It's great to be with you, Kevin. Thank you.
You don't sound like we've gotten you up too early.
No, actually, you know, when we come over to the States, we're so used to it now. I think jet lag is something which is a state of mind, or at least I try and tell myself that.
And you've been over here how long?
Only a couple of days. We arrived on Wednesday of this week.
So this really is the start of your tour.
Yeah, this is very much the start of the tour.
And it's
quite an extensive tour as well. We're over in the States and Canada for 3 weeks. And we'll be finishing in Stony Brook, New York, on the 18th of March. But before then, we'll be taking in Toronto, Winnipeg, Kingston, Ontario, Cedar City, Utah, Regina in Canada, Calgary, and Indianapolis.
That should be a lovely, lovely tour around.
It's a good tour, and to do this job, you have to be used to living out of a suitcase and pretty organized at doing so.
How much time do you spend touring as opposed to staying in England and working there?
Well, the year is divided into three sections so that we try and follow the school holidays. Otherwise, those of us with kids, and several of us have kids at school, would never get to see our kids. So it's very, very well organized by our management. In a year, we're probably on the road for between 6 and 7 months because the concert schedule is really tough. We do well over 100 concerts. This year, it's around about 120. So it's a lot of time on the road. And then really between tours, we're at home. I am a husband and a father between tours and really enjoy doing that. And when we're not touring, we're in the studio, we're doing educational outreach work. So it really is a full-time plus job.
Talk a little bit about the educational outreach work.
Yeah, it's something that we take very, very seriously, not least because we consider ourselves as ambassadors to choral music, but also that we encounter so many people on our trips around the world who really aspire to be singers like those in the King's Singers and who aspire to make something musical with their lives. And we feel a real sense of responsibility to nurture and to mentor people in choirs and young people to really help them launch themselves into the next stage of their lives. One thing that I found in my travels around the world is that people that attend educational establishments tend to have quite a short-term view of life. And they're only looking ahead, which is pretty inevitable when you're only 17, 18, 19 years old. But you're only looking ahead a short time. And we try to encourage people to look ahead career-wise in their lives and to make sensible choices early on.
How do you go about that?
Well, we go about that with certainly with mentoring, but also we go about that by trying to instill in young people a really good culture of work. And, of course, there's a great culture of work in choral singing, you need to be very disciplined, you need to be very organized, your presentation needs to be good, your communication skills need to be good, you need to be articulate. And all of those things are not necessarily things which people are born with, but you can teach people. And what better way to do it than through singing in a choir and singing in small ensembles?
Do all or most of the King's singers start as choir boys?
Absolutely, yeah. We've all had a very similar choral background. We've all been through, as boy sopranos, through cathedral or church choirs. I was a chorister at St. Paul's Cathedral in London, 1976 to 1980, giving my age away now. And I had a great time. It was a really formative time in my life. And when I left there and went to a normal school, I really was very focused on wanting to continue to be a singer.
And the sound, I assume then that the typical training of boys in choirs strongly reflects or really even creates the sound of the King's singers.
Yes, it really does. We have two things on our side in the King's singers. One is this background that you mentioned, where we go through this culture of learning, where we're used to being treated as professional singers from a very early age, because the workload singing in a cathedral choir, as well as your educational work, is pretty intense. At St. Paul's, when I was a chorister there, we used to sing upwards of 9-10 services a week in the cathedral, plus special services. So that's a start. The other thing which stands in our favor is the fact that, having had this training, we're also English, and there's something about being English which really helps the sound of the King's singers, which is not to say that we haven't auditioned people from other countries. We've auditioned people from America, we've auditioned people from Canada, we've auditioned people from other countries in Europe. But there's just something about the background and about the way that English people form words in singing, which makes, first of all, the sound of the King's singers absolutely specific to England, but also it seems to appeal to people throughout the world. So I'm very grateful to that, because it's something which has helped me make a living.
Oh, sure. You said you've auditioned people from elsewhere. Have you ever actually had a non-English King's singer?
Well, there we go. You see, that's the proof of the formula, because we haven't. All the people in the King's singers have come from a very similar background, and we're all English.
And have you had anybody come audition from another country and fake an English accent just to try to pull one over on you?
No, we haven't. But occasionally, and I cannot understand why, people put fake English accents on when they speak to us after concerts, as if to make out either that they're English or that we might not understand them if they're speaking with an American accent. We seem to get by pretty well.
What's your own personal progress from choir boy to King's singer?
For me, it's an interesting one, because I didn't go to university. I went after St. Paul's Cathedral, age 13. As I said, I went to a normal grammar school. I have to be careful saying normal in this part of the world.
Yes, you do.
Don't get it mixed up. I went to not a school in normal, but a normal school in a place called Stockport in the north of England, Stockport Grammar School, a school with which I still have ties. And I still visit to do a little bit of educational work and a little bit of mentoring there as well. And after that, I auditioned for music college. And I was very focused on wanting to be a successful singer as quickly as possible. And that was not necessarily a good thing, because one thing I've learned as I've got older is that people develop at their own pace. We mustn't force people to be something that they're not ready to be. And so I got into music college. I went to a place called the Royal Northern College of Music, which has a great reputation. It's in Manchester in the north of England. And unfortunately, I failed my first year singing test.
Uh-oh.
Which was, at the time, a disaster for me. And the head of the department, the head of the faculty, called me into his office and said, "Paul, I'm not sure that you have a vocal instrument that we can train, and I'm not sure that you're going to get the maximum benefit out of being a student here. Maybe you'll consider going to university." So I went away and I lined myself up a couple of places at universities, And yet there were some members of the faculty who were really keen that I stayed, because I wasn't a disruptive student or anything. I was a good student, but I just maybe wasn't quite ready to have that intensive vocal training. But there were some people there that believed in me, and I decided to stay. And essentially, I just made my own course, if you like. I attended all the lectures that I needed to do to get my academic qualifications through the college, and I went off and pretty much did my own thing. I formed my own vocal quartet. I joined Manchester Cathedral Choir, and I started getting involved in singing some big band music and some pop music, joined a couple of bands, and really started not to train myself as such, but to get experience in as many different genres of music as possible. Not with a view to joining the King Singers, although you would think that was great training to join the King Singers, but just because that was what I felt I needed to do. I didn't want to be an opera singer, and at music college I was being trained to be an opera singer, and I wasn't really ready for that age 19, 20 years old, and I never ever wanted to do it anyway. So
when did you decide to audition for the King Singers?
Well, you don't really decide to be auditioned for the King Singers. You have to be in the right place at the right time. And after I graduated from college, I worked as a freelance singer for 6 years. And I was also building up a really good list of people that I was teaching to sing. I was teaching the choristers at Westminster Under School in London and really working very hard and yet somehow chasing my tail all the time. You know, I was always busy, but I hadn't quite got that big break. And when Bob Chilcott, my predecessor, announced his retirement from the King Singers, a process takes place where the current members of the group start asking questions around it within the business, usually in London, where they'll ask people to recommend singers for audition. And I was lucky that a couple of people recommended me to audition for the group. And then you embark upon this fairly complex audition schedule, because the group, of course, is very busy, and so it needs to find windows in its diary where they can audition people. And also, in auditioning for the King Singers, you actually stand as a member of the group. It's no good having a great solo voice if you're not a good ensemble singer. So I had two auditions where I was standing, singing with the King Singers, feeling a part of the group. And what was such a great experience for me in that whole thing was how I really felt it was a job that I could do. From the moment I stood with these guys, these incredible musicians with whom I felt I was making a sound. And that really is a crucial part of being in the King Singers. It's not necessarily being the best musician in the world, but being very adaptable, being flexible, and having a good musical ear, listening to what's going on around you, and being a part of an ensemble, and in equal measure being able to step out of the ensemble to have a good solo voice as well when needs be.
And, of course, having a voice that matches with the other guys.
Yeah.
Enough that it has a good blend. Well, since we're talking about the sound, let's hear a little bit more of the King Singers. We've got a couple tracks here. My Heart is a Holy Place, Black is the Color of My True Love's Hair. What would you suggest we hear next?
Oh, I think I'd love you to play My Heart is a Holy Place, because it shows the King Singers in a mode, if you like, of typical English choral singing. It shows our background. And although the piece is written by an American composer, Patricia Van Ness, who adapted the piece for us, and she's a great friend of the group, I think what it does is it shows the King Singers in typical choral mode as opposed to folk song or pop mode. And it comes from an album which we recently launched called From the Heart. An EP, I believe they're called. So it's a short album, and it's a nice track. I hope folks enjoy it.
It's the King Singers, My Heart is a Holy Place. We're talking with Paul Phoenix, who is the tenor of the six-man group. They're going to be in Springfield Saturday night at 8 o'clock at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois at Springfield. And you're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Amen.
My Heart is a Holy Place is the name of that tune, sung by the King Singers, who are going to be at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois Springfield Saturday night at 8 o'clock. They were just in Bloomington at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts last night. And we're talking with Paul Phoenix, who is the tenor. There are two counter tenors also, very high voices, a couple of baritones and a bass. And Paul, I noticed that from an article that was in your press packet that the age of the singers ranges from 23 to 53.
Yeah.
And you're somewhere in between.
Yeah, I'm somewhere in between. I'm 43. And I think that reflects, first of all, the changing times of the King Singers. In fact, Johnny, our brand new bass, he joined us at the tail end of 2010. He's actually, thank goodness, turned 24 now. So, but then our oldest has also turned 54 as well. It shows a level of experience, but it also shows a youthful drive. And I think the group has to have the right balance of people in it. If it were just purely a young group, I don't think it would reflect a level of maturity and performance which the group is able to reflect in its concert making and in its recordings. So I think it's important, and I think it's very healthy that there is this relatively slow turnover of singers, which in my opinion is a great thing, because I think if you had three or four people leaving every year, the King Singers would not be the King Singers. It just simply wouldn't be like that. In the entire history of the group since 1968, including the current six members, I think it's 22 singers that have gone through the ranks. So it shows the slow turnover of singers, and for me that's a very healthy and a very good thing. And also, you know, Johnny, in joining the group aged 23, now 24, he's got this youthful enthusiasm. He's got a level of experience which is very useful. He's got perfect pitch, which is a real useful thing to have in the group. But he's got an outlook on life which is maybe different to mine. In fact, it's definitely different to mine because I'm just some middle-aged bloke.
You've been in the group 13 years.
Yeah, I'm in my 14th year now.
What kind of changes have you noticed in that time, or progress, or whatever's happened in those 13 years?
It's been a whirlwind, really, of 13 and a half years now, not least because the time passes so quickly. And I know people say as they get older, the time seems to go real fast. My goodness me, in the King Singers, it seems to double in speed because you're so busy. There's never any time just to sit and reflect. When I'm not singing, I'm with my family and really enjoying time with my family and keeping fit and doing all the things that I enjoy doing. But in the time I've been in the King Singers, I don't think there's ever been a better time than now. Not because there have been bad times, but just because the dynamic of the group, the way it is now, with Johnny joining, and his, I'm going to say it again, youthful enthusiasm for the job, it has really brought a breath of fresh air into the group, which was there before but it's just different. You know, when someone joins the group, they bring fresh ideas, they bring new energies into the group. And it's just so nice to have someone like Johnny in the group. Having said that, I look back on my time in the group and the changes that have taken place. There have been three or four changes of singer while I've been in the group. And each time I see my own role changing in the group, I feel my levels of confidence improving. I feel my experience being even more worthwhile to the new people joining the group, so that the things that I've learned in the job, the professionalism that's needed to do the job, I can pass on to other people who find it, like I did, a bit of a shock when they join this real tight-knit, small community of singers.
Has the type of music that you sing changed, or the balance of music you sing changed at all in that time?
Not really. The things that have changed have been the number of recordings that we do in a year. We're now doing three, sometimes four recordings in a year. When I first joined, it was usually one or two. So that most certainly has changed. What does change is that the King Singers are constantly looking at ways of commissioning new music. And you'll go through periods, especially, for example, in 2008 during our 40th anniversary year, where we had several new pieces which were written for us as part of our celebrations. But now looking ahead, we are looking ahead to 2012 for the Diamond Jubilee of Queen Elizabeth II, and we're putting together a tour in the UK which is going to reflect a celebration for Queen Elizabeth. But also we're looking at commissioning a substantial amount of new music for that tour. And there are always new things which are coming along. We're going out to Australia next year as well, and we're looking at commissioning new music for that tour. So the nature, the essential nature of what the King Singers is about and what we perform doesn't really change, but there's always new repertoire coming in.
And you do a balance of quite old music, particularly from the Renaissance, and quite new music, as you're saying.
That's
and then
right.
Folk music,
yeah.
And some pop arrangements. Does the experience of singers who come into the group, does it tend to encompass all of those types of singing before you get in? In other words, if you've had some sort of pop singing experience, such as you've actually had, does that help?
Yeah,
to get in.
Yeah, I don't think it's compulsory, because I think most people that join the group come from various areas of specialty that they have enjoyed performing in. So some people are really good at performing Renaissance and early music. Other people have had a wealth of experience performing modern contemporary music. I think what happens is when someone joins the group, what they bring to the group is a level of talent and a level of interest in certain genres of music. And they learn an awful lot from the people that are already in the group. They learn a lot stylistically about performing pop music, for example. I certainly have learned an awful lot about performing Renaissance music, because I'd done plenty of performance of that kind of music, but I wasn't very good at it, and I didn't enjoy it, and I didn't see through the complexities of the music to what it was all about. And yet I think in the King Singers I've been able to get better at that kind of things. But I also think that I've helped people with their interpretation of the way that they sing pop music and folk music, because that's something, especially pop music, that I really enjoyed singing before I joined the King Singers.
And I assume that by now you now enjoy singing Renaissance music.
Yeah, I do. I do. I wouldn't describe it as my favorite music, and yet at the same time, I've really found such joy, especially when we're recording from singing that kind of music. It's just it's something which technically, vocally, can make such challenges, and I've really enjoyed embracing and getting through those challenges.
Yeah, I have a question of complete curiosity on my part.
Mm-hmm.
There was a period where the King Singers had changed its name to one word,
yeah.
King Singers.
Yeah.
That didn't seem to go over.
No, I don't think we fully believed in it either. We tried it for a season or so, and then we decided that it was branding too far, and we went back to our true roots and our true values of the King's Singers. Having said which, most people, I know you haven't, Kevin, but most people describe us as the King Singers, or occasionally the King's Sisters, which can be a bit of a problem. In fact, I can tell you a really funny story.
Go right ahead.
The first track you played was The Gift to Be Simple. That's the title track of our 2009 album, Simple Gifts. For that album, we were awarded a Grammy, for which we are incredibly honored. Although we were in the States when the Grammy was awarded, we were actually in Cincinnati working with the Pops Orchestra. So we weren't able to pick up the award ourselves. And so the award was shipped back to England. And the award arrived, opened the box, and Best Classical Crossover Album 2009 awarded to the King's Sisters. Oh, for goodness sake.
So did you keep it or did you send it back?
Well, there's apparently a mechanism in place with the Grammy organization that if there's a problem with the plaque itself on the award, that you have to use a butter knife to remove the plaque, and they will send you a replacement one. So a couple of the guys in the group, what they've done is they've kept the King's Sisters one on and put the King's Singers one on. I couldn't really bring myself to do that. I did remove the King's Sisters plaque and put the proper one on, but I have kept it.
Yes, well, I would think one would have to because it is a great story.
Yeah.
I noticed at the end of your bio, just before we hear one more tune from the King Singers, that you say you're a bit of a car buff, and
oh,
you
yeah.
bought your ultimate car at the end of 2009. What was it?
Well,
what
yes,
is it?
I am a complete petrol head, as we would describe ourselves in England, and I love driving, and it's not the speed, but it's just, I don't know, it's just, I like nice cars. And I had, before 2009, a Porsche 911, Carrera 2S, a 997, for those that that are interested in that. It was a six-speed stick shift, and I liked it, but and it wasn't my ultimate car, and I replaced that with a Porsche Cayman S with the PDK gearbox, which is a seven-speed sequential gearbox, and it's in white. And as these colors are described by names, I describe it as midlife crisis white.
So that's your ultimate car.
It sure is.
So you'll have that for forever till it breaks down.
No, because I never keep cars long enough for me to become emotionally attached to them. I really like them, and then I tend to move on to something else. But I'm really enjoying this still.
Man after my own heart.
Yeah.
It's Paul Phoenix, tenor with the King Singers. They're going to be at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois at Springfield tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. And you can go to sangamonauditorium.com. I think that's their web address. And for the King Singers, you can go to their website, which is kingssingers.com. Lots of information on there, including biographies of all six gentlemen, including the new boy, as they say, Jonathan Howard, or Johnny. And I was requested specially to go out on this last tune, which I think I read was by the fellow you replaced, Bob Chilcott.
That's right, yeah. Bob Chilcott wrote this song for us on our recent album. It's the title track for the album. It's called Swimming Over London. It's an original song for us, and I like it.
I'm glad to hear it, and I'm sure our listeners will as well. Thanks, Paul, very much for joining us on the show.
My pleasure.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9.
A woman is swimming over London. A fox turns up his face to like a mermaid. And darkness is a murmur in her.
Swimming Over London, sung by the King's Singers. They'll be at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois in Springfield tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. For more information and tickets, go to uis.edu/Sangamon Auditorium. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Coming up next, a conversation with Welsh singer-songwriter David Llewellyn, who will be at Heartland Gallery in Urbana this very evening. Support for our show comes in part from the Music Shop, celebrating 50 years of service to music education, providing for musicians of all ages in over 200 school music programs. They also feature guitars, amplifiers, digital pianos, and sound equipment in the Pro Sound Center at 27 East Market View Drive, Market View Plaza, Champaign, or at themusicshop.com. We also have support from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of foods from around the world, including cheeses, olives, spices, hot sauces, olive oils, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio.
So young and easy, and the apple boughs, the starry dingle is shining now. As boyhood wanders on a hill of ferns, foretell a future prince of words. So forgive his adolescence. Cause if you listen carefully, we will all hear his voice through the greatest of lawn when he sings in his chains like the sea. And so to London with his Irish bride and his love of Caitlin so strong inside. And amongst the jesters, got his diamond bright still on the outside, but hey, that's all right. Then New York came and took him, and the bourbon flowed free. But you can still hear his voice through the gray mists of lawn as he sang in his chains like the sea. You can still hear his voice through the gray mists of lawn as he sings in his chains like the sea. You can still hear his voice through the gray mists of lawn as he sings in his chains like the sea. The glass he's holding won't be his first, nor it's sufficient to quench his thirst. A trapeze artist who stands alone with no one holding the net below. And on that distant shore he left us his unfinished legacy. But we can still hear his voice through the gray mists of lawn as he sings in his chains like the sea. You can still hear his voice through the gray mists of lawn as he sings in his chains like the sea.
We just heard a tune called The Gray Mists of Lawn by David Llewellyn, who was also the singer there, from his CD called Limited Edition. He's going to be in Urbana tonight at the Heartland Gallery. He's a singer-songwriter from Wales, currently living in Nashville, and he's going to actually have a partner with him. I'll let him talk about. But he's on the phone with us right now as he's about to head out here. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, no problem. We're just about to get in the car and leave, so your timing is perfect.
I'm glad to hear it because I just heard that you were going to be here, and you were at the Heartland Gallery last year, and apparently were very well received, not surprisingly.
Yeah, it was the festival there,
for the folk festival.
Yes,
Folk and Roots Festival. Yeah,
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
You grew up in the, well, actually, before I even ask you about that, the song we just heard, a tribute to Dylan Thomas. Larne, by the way, I had to ask you how to pronounce it. It's spelled Laugharne. Where is that?
It's actually right on the coast of South Wales and kind of south of Carmarthen. It's an absolutely beautiful little town. He lived in a small little, it was actually a smuggler's cottage, which is halfway up a cliff, right on the estuary there, and it's now a little museum, and you can go there, and they've got all kinds of memorabilia and shows and stuff going on there. It's a beautiful, beautiful spot, and while I was there, the mists were rolling up the estuary from Ireland. They come across the Irish Sea, and it was just stunningly beautiful, and the song just had to be The Grey Mists of Lawn.
You have commented that though you moved to United States in 91, I guess, and have been in Nashville since about 96, that you've had a pull back to Wales particularly for your songwriting and coming back to your roots in that way.
It did. I spent 5 years in Austin, Texas, which was wonderful, and then I came up to Nashville, and I've loved it here. And really for like, I guess, 3, 4, 5 years, I really wanted to try and write country songs, and I think we all have a go at that. But they knew I was faking it, but, you know, you're not from these parts, are you, boy? You know?
Yeah.
So I'd never heard what a screen door sounded like when I was a kid, so...
What sounded like?
A screen door. I didn't know what one of those sounded like, so...
What does that mean?
The screen door, everything, you know, there's a lot of them in country songs, and so I threw them in there a couple of times.
Oh, I see.
And the old storm doors or whatever, it's not what I was brought up with. We don't have... mosquitoes or whatever back in Wales, I guess.
But you commented also in your bio that it was actually an American country singer, Randy Travis, who sort of rejuvenated you a bit.
It did. I was I've been in the music thing in the UK for years and years since I was about 18. I've been pretty much a full time musician, but it had become in the late 80s, in particular, it had become very computerized and samples and. Pet Shop Boys and stuff like that, and I went into a studio to record a song, and they looked at my guitar and said, you know, can we sample that?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, I want to play it. And I realized, yeah, me and I guess I was a folk singer, I guess, at that point, I hadn't realized it. And someone said, you know, America's where the real players are. And so I came across the Randy Travis album, blew me away. There were a load of instruments on there I'd never even heard before, and dobro and things like that. And I said, okay, that's it, I'm going. And the rest is history.
And you're on tour now with a Swedish singer-songwriter who I gather you're rather attached to.
That's right. We met on a songwriting retreat in Sweden. I guess part of winning the John Lennon songwriting competition was you get invited to do those things. You become the featured writer or something like that. And she was one of the participants, and we got to write songs together, and we've been kind of bouncing back and forth between Sweden and here, and we've met a couple of times in the UK, and we just keep writing, and we just love singing together. So she's here for 6 months this time, so we're going to do some tours and concerts and festivals wherever we can find them.
And I'm just looking at her name, having not heard her name. It just looks like Ida Kristen to me. Is that how she
yep.
says it?
No, it's Swedish. It's Ida.
Ida Kristen. Perhaps true.
That's right. Thanks for checking. It's the standard kind of pronunciation, I guess, in Sweden.
Well, you'll be singing both separately and together tonight?
Yes. We do a lot of harmonies for each other and play both guitars at the same time. It's a joy to do that. I've been on my own out there playing and whatever, and just to have somebody with you, the harmonies. I'm a real big harmony guy, so I just love that.
It's hard to sing harmony with yourself.
It is. I've tried trumpet, I've tried, but things like that, but, you know, it's hard to play the guitar and do those things at the same time.
Since you mentioned the John Lennon songwriting contest, which you won in the folk category in 2008, for a particular song on this CD, maybe we should play that and give us a little background to this song called Take Us Down.
I guess I was part of the first generation not to go down the coal mines. I never did go down. Everybody in my family did. And I was back over there. Visiting, it was actually my mother's funeral over there, and I visited a coal mine. They have one there that's historically preserved from about 100 years ago, and they take you down in a big cage, and it's dark, deep, and very scary. And the mine is down there, another tour guides, and they took us on a tour, and they explained how it was back then, and it was scary stuff. But it rang true with me, and it was what my uncles and people in my family had been saying exactly what they'd been saying about the hardships, and I just had to write the song to honor, I guess, the generations before me. And it was very common back then to take a child, your son or whatever, down with you, because he could help, and you were only paid for the coal that you could cut. And the boys 8, 9, 10 years old would be down there doing that, and I thought, oh my, you know, I have to write about that, and I wrote it for the boy, and then realized this is about the dad taking his son down there for the very first time. It's been heartbreaking.
It's the song Take Us Down by David Llewellyn, who's on the phone with us as he heads out from Nashville. He's going to be in Urbana by this evening to perform at 7 o'clock at the Heartland Gallery. I should say the doors open then, along with fellow singer-songwriter Ida Kristen. And this is from David's CD called Limited Edition, here on Live and Local.
Take us down, my friend, and quickly. Now take us down, lest we wise up. Take us down to make a living. Count us down and count us up. Here is my son who stands beside me, the pride and joy of Mountain Ash. Better hold on tight to my leg, boy. This old cage goes down real fast. And I can't believe I ask you to fill a miner's shoes. They don't make a miner's cap, the one as small as you. And with eyes as big as saucers, you stick out your little chin. That would fill me up with pride inside if I didn't feel so ill. And give him chance, you ugly bastards. It's his first time, it's his first day. They all stopped with all their joking, 'cause they all start exact same way. And heed ye well, those sweet gray ponies, they were once as white as snow. They've been blinded by the darkness. They'll trample you and never know. So kneel right here beside me. Catch the coal as it comes loose. They're only paying for the lumps today. All that small coal ain't no use. But hoist it up into that hopper so they can weigh our sweat and blood. Paying pittance for our labor in this hellhole that we've dug. But let me hoist you on my shoulders, 'cause this old shift is nearly done. And we'll march through town triumphant, but you'll cry when you see Mom. You always were a dirty muckin, but coal, it gets beneath the skin. You can scrub to wash it all away, but that's a battle you won't win. So let me dry you in this towel and carry you upstairs to bed, just the way that my dad did for me. And I'll cry like my dad did. Better count those toes and fingers, take a deep breath while you can. Best forget about that schooling, 'cause today you became a man. Ah, it cuts a deeper sorrow, starting you off down the mine, 'cause it'll kill you sooner or later. It just bides its own sweet time. So take us down, my friend, and quickly. Now take us down, lest we wise up. Take us down to make a living. Count us down and count us up.
Take Us Down is the name of that song by David Llewellyn, who's going to be singing tonight at the Heartland Gallery in downtown Urbana. Doors opening at 7 o'clock. He'll be with Ida Kristen, also a singer-songwriter. How much do you think your next songwriting project, recording project, which you're working on right now, reflects American versus Welsh things?
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting mix. The next CD coming out is actually going to be a follow-on from the last one, and it's still going to be really about my upbringing, my feelings, or whatever, of Wales. But I am working on a separate CD, which is much more, I guess, Americana. I enjoy that kind of thing. It's, if you really have to nail it down, I'm a James Taylor fan, and so there's probably an album like that coming out. There's also going to be an album with me and Ida. We've been writing songs for the last couple of years together, so and we get a lot of requests for that CD. So we definitely need to get on that. Probably in the middle of the summer.
And it almost seems that if you're going to be a folk singer, you're going to have to write ballads at some point. And you have one. You have one on your limited edition CD called "The Ballad of Geordie and Maggie."
Right.
What's the background to that?
It's a really simple song. It was someone we were talking actually here in Nashville one time, and someone was saying, "Yeah, sometimes it's better not to know what's." You know, something's gone wrong in a relationship, or best not to know sometimes. We turn a blind eye and we pretend not to ask the question, stuff like that. And a lot of the old folk ballads, especially in the UK, are a lot about that kind of moral tale. They have a moral kind of background to them, and that's all that's in this. It's really an interesting relationship between two people.
And I've really enjoyed listening to this CD, and we look forward to hearing whichever one is out next. And it's nice to know you've got some advance interest in some of the ones you haven't even made yet.
Yep. We'll be doing a mixture of both tonight at the Heartland Cafe. And a big thanks to Jan for letting us come in and saying we're gonna have a lot of fun tonight.
Sure. Jan Chandler, who's the owner of Heartland Gallery. There'll be some refreshments, she says, along with the music. So the doors open at 7. It's David Llewellyn with Ida Kristen in Urbana tonight, and I really appreciate you joining us on the show.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Jody and Maggie got married, though she knew him a sailor for life. But home he gets Monday from Dublin, and he'll take her then as his wife. And the passion runs hot until morning, and there in the cold morning blue, he swears he knows nothing about Rachel, though it says so right here in his new tattoo. But Maggie, don't you go looking what you don't want to find. Don't you worry your pretty little head. No, don't you go pay it no mind. Oh, don't you go pay it no mind. But sailors' wives rub against lonely, especially one sweet in the eye. And Maggie was sure enough friendly, all those in favor say aye. But the nipper's birthday was in February, and Geordie he started to count. So sure he was out in the Indies for the whole month of May, March, April, May, and no doubt. But Geordie, don't you go looking for what you don't want to find. Don't you worry your pretty little head, no. Don't you go pay it no mind, oh. Don't you go pay it no mind. 'Cause it'll all work out just fine if your eye is blind. Jody and Maggie still married, and the kids have got kids of their own. It ain't perfect, but somehow they manage to keep on their chest what sometimes it's best not to know. So sleeping dog, you can lie now in the bed, soft innocence lined. Don't you worry your pretty little head, no, don't you go pay it no mind, no. Don't you go pay it no mind.
David Llewellyn here on Live and Local. You can go hear him along with Ida Kristen tonight at Heartland Gallery in downtown Urbana. The doors open at 7 o'clock. For more information, go to heartland-gallery.com or for tickets, call 337-4767. That's in the 217 area. Here are some other events going on that you can go out and see and hear live. The musical Man of La Mancha is at the Krannert Center, put on by the University of Illinois School of Music Opera Program. Performances tonight and tomorrow at 7:30 and one on Sunday afternoon at 3. The Boneyard Jazz Quintet is at the Iron Post in downtown Urbana tonight at 5 o'clock. Samba Soul is in that location at 7:30. Organist Dana Robinson is featured with the University of Illinois Chamber Orchestra tonight at 7:30 in Smith Recital Hall on the U of I campus in Urbana. Bolo Katakonde and Rhythm Manding are at the Independent Media Center in Urbana tonight at 7:30. Pete Sander is at the Walnut Street Winery in Rochester tonight at 8 o'clock. It's a program called Pickin' on Chet. Salute to Chet Atkins at the Bement Country Opry tonight at 7. Boss Tenors play jazz at Zorba's in downtown, rather in Campustown in Champaign, 9:30 tonight. In St. Joseph, it's Cartoons Jazz at the Prince of Peace Lutheran Church. That starts at 6:30. The Blue G's play bluegrass at Cafe Andiamo in Springfield tonight at 7 o'clock. It's a Holi, an Indian festival of colors with traditional Indian music tonight, or rather tomorrow at 7:30 at the Krannert Center in Urbana. The musical Once Upon a Mattress is at Parkland College Theater in Champaign tonight and Saturday at 7:30. It's the Indoor Bluegrass Festival at the Independent Media Center in Urbana on Saturday starting at 4 o'clock. The Sound of Illinois Barbershop Chorus presents a program called It Had to Be You at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts, Saturday at 7 o'clock, and there's also a Sunday matinee at 2 o'clock. It's the Jane Hartman Trio with Corey Brown playing jazz at St. John's Lutheran Church in Springfield, Saturday at 7 o'clock. The Cosmic Jazz Quintet follows the West Coast Blues Ensemble at the Iron Post in Urbana. West Coast Blues at 6 o'clock Saturday, Cosmic Jazz at 9:30. The Eastern Illinois University Wind Symphony is at the Dowden of Fine Arts Center in Charleston Saturday night at 7:30. And it's the St. Louis Bella Corda Guitar Ensemble with the Millikan Guitar Ensemble at Kuiper Hall in Decatur Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock. Support for today's program comes from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays in the Bouvon Wine Bar. This Saturday's tasting from 2 to 6 p.m. features a selection of 10 different organic wines. More information is at thecorkscrew.com. This is Illinois Public Media, WYLFM and HD1 and HD2 Urbana, with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville.